Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned in to Modus Operandi. He's often denigrated by the West, characterized by mainstream media as a lunatic that ruled Libya with an iron fist, sometimes described as a terrorist authoritarian. But is that really who Muammar Gaddafi actually was? October 20th, 2023 marks the 12th anniversary of Gaddafi's death. Today, we'll discuss the state of a post-Gaddafi Libya and see if his death had ripple effects throughout Africa. All right, let's get into the MO. Since the fall of Gaddafi in 2011, following the US-led NATO bombing campaigns in Libya, the country is anything but a country, only a name. Remember when then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said this?
We came, we saw, he died.
Civilian life has been decimated, taking hard-fought gains of development back 60 years. The land has been balkanized by warring factions, all vying for control after the death of Gaddafi left a power vacuum across this oil-rich state. Many lay this destabilization at the feet of Clinton, whose State Department failed to map out what would happen in Libya after Gaddafi died. So to discuss more about this grim anniversary and look at the African continent as a whole, we'll talk to Elijah Magnier. He is a veteran war correspondent who's been embedded in hotspots all over the world, including on the ground in Libya when it all began to unravel. You can subscribe to his work at ejmagnier.com. First, Elijah, October 20, 2023, it marks 12 years, the anniversary of Gaddafi's death. You're a veteran war correspondent. You've been through Libya and much of the Arab-speaking world. From what you've seen, is Libya better off since he died? Did the U.S. and NATO better Libya by its bombing campaign in 2011?
Well, actually, yes. I was in Libya before the war, during the war, and when Tripoli fell. And I think I can say the situation in Libya following the death of Muammar Gaddafi is worse, and the country is far from better off without Gaddafi. Because following his death, Libya experienced significant political instability. The country first was attacked by ISIS and then split between all the various militia and factions, leading to a very wide civil war and tribe fighting against each other, weapons in the hand of all the tribes. And now we have two central governments, one in the west in Tripoli, another one in the east in Tobruk. To unite the country, it has not been possible, and this is not going to be achieved any soon. So we're not looking at any soon stability in Libya. Economically, Libya, oil-dependent economy, has suffered tremendously as a result of the fall of Gaddafi. From being an oil export country and producer, that was the main of the Libyan economy. Now the oil production has been disrupted so many times. The factions are stealing it and they're smuggling it. And the economy in the country is really on the floor. From the security point of view, the vacuum left by Gaddafi's death led to the rise of different militia apart from the two governments. And these militia control different parts of the country. There are violence in the north, violence in the south that rarely we speak about. The borders with Egypt and with Chad are wide open, the border with Tunisia also. And also from the human right, we cannot talk about an improvement because the presence of these militia and ISIS who killed many Libyan and foreigner, particularly Egyptian who were working in the country, we've seen a kind of unlawful situation, unlawful killing, torture, etc. And the last is the migration that we see crossing from Libya, or Libya allowing people coming from Africa to cross to mainly in Italy, and all that is less under control today. So the NATO really intervention in 2011 played a crucial role in destabilizing Libya. Without saying that the intervention was illegal, because the United Nations allowed only the protection of civilians, but not to destroy country, to destroy Gaddafi's army and his rules, and to allow people to kill him. So we can't say that NATO's intervention in Libya was any better than in Afghanistan or in Iraq.
Now, many, many people have described Libya now as a failed state, that the rule of law no longer exists. You've got, you know, major military factions practically and in effect balkanizing the country. Who are those military leaders, especially General Haftar, with his ties to Washington?
Indeed, the Libya today is a failed state, or a state with limited central authority. And we have two authority in the north and in the east, and we have in Tripoli. Following the 2011 intervention at the death of Gaddafi, the term of balkanization is often used to describe the fragmentation of Libya. So it is no longer one state because it's not united, and because it's ravaged by militia and by different factions, and because the division among the two parliament, central government, is weighing heavy on Libya. So we can say that the presence of NATO forces and the intervention of NATO was devastating to Libya. Now, yes, Gaddafi, when he was killed, we have different figures that emerged, particularly General Khalifa Haftar, who was in the past an officer in Gaddafi's army. And he also was one of the players in the 1969 coup d'etat that brought Gaddafi to power. However, when Gaddafi kicked him out following the war in Chad in 1980s, he went to the United States. And this is where it is very, very well known that he has established strong ties with the CIA. And he returned to Libya in 2011. As a CIA general, as a CIA man and Libyan general. So in 2014, we have seen that Haftar played a significant role, a military role. So he was responsible for an operation, a military operation in Benghazi at that time, 2014, called Operation Dignity. And that was the beginning of a significant military campaign and his influence in that part of Libya. He became the leader of the Libyan National Army, so the LNA, and he is based in Tobruk. He is one of the most powerful military groups in the country, and he is receiving support from various countries, including the United States. So he is not on his own on the military theater in Libya, but he is one of the most powerful military players.
So as we look at the recent destabilization in Niger and more broadly across the Sahel, could we say this is a knock-on effect after the fall of Libya and after the death of Gaddafi?
Well, we understand what's happening today in Africa is indeed related to what happened in Libya and the fall of Gaddafi. So Gaddafi understood that the unity among the Arab countries is impossible, because many countries, particularly the Gulf oil-rich countries, were very tight to the U.S. and were hosting U.S. bases, military bases, and were completely delivered to the U.S. So he turned toward Africa. Now, by turning toward Africa, he wanted to do, and he started, exactly what the BRICS is doing today and what the New World Order is trying to impose itself, to kick out the US hegemony and to give back to the African their dignity and stop the Western resources theft. So Gaddafi had a very grand vision for Africa. Through his rules, he positions Libya as a central player in African affairs. He was ambitious. He was driven by a mix of Islam, ideology, economy, and political motivation, although he embraced the non-Muslim African countries as well. And he had many initiatives. He started with the kind of African Union and in transforming the Organization for the African Unity into African Union. And he did that in 2011, before he was killed. He saw the Union as a step forward, a little bit away from the control of the United States and from the European colonialism control. But his vision was not fully embraced by the African leaders because of the powerful presence of France and Germany and the United States in Africa, who did not want Africa to stand so soon. And he also wanted to present the African investment, investing billions of dollars in Africa. And he invested in a different sector, including agriculture, small businesses, telecommunication, real estate, hotels, and much more. So he has invested in bank. He wanted to create the African bank. He wanted to create the gold dinar. And I think that was one of the reasons why he was mainly killed. And that was an ambitious plan. So today, Africa is waking up on all that, and they see how the African wealth is overwhelming, but it is misused, is stolen by the Westerner. So this is why we've seen in Mali, in Burkina Faso, and Niger, they're kicking out the French, they're getting rid of the French colonialism. And I think other African countries will follow, but that will be much slower and more gradual.
All right, coming up next, France, a former colonial power across much of Africa. Did they try to assassinate Gaddafi in the 80s? We'll discuss it when we return with Elijah Magnier. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
By the early 1950s, Kenya became one of the centers of resistance to colonialism in Africa. The British invaders infringed on the most basic rights of the local population. Great Britain pursued the policy of squeezing out the local population from their indigenous lands. The best arable areas were given to white farmers, dooming Kenyans to poverty and hunger. This caused a sharp protest of the peasants and led to the emerging of the Mau Mau movement, which started the fight against the invaders. The rebels called themselves Kenya Land and Freedom Army. The spiritual leader of the movement was the anti-colonial activist Jomo Kenyatta. The freedom fighters used guerrilla tactics and attacked individual units of the British troops. The latter responded with massive air raids and artillery attacks. When suppressing the uprising, London relied on maximum cruelty. Over 50,000 Kenyans were killed. About 300,000 people were thrown into prisons and concentration camps, where torture, in no way inferior in cruelty to the Nazis, was widely practiced. The ferocity of the colonialists only led to temporary success. In 1963, the British Empire had to recognize the independence of Kenya. However, the colonial regime left behind a trail of blood and wounds that the Kenyan nation has not recovered from until now.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Manila Chan. Recently, a two-time former prime minister of Italy, Giuliano Amato, now 85 years old, told the media that a French Air Force missile accidentally downed an Italian passenger jet in the Mediterranean Sea back in 1980. That missile, intended for Gaddafi's military jet, which he did not board after being tipped off by the Italians. Gaddafi dodged that attempted assassination and many others in his time to go on ruling Libya for another 31 years after that alleged incident, as reported by Mr. Amato. Elijah Magnier, veteran war correspondent, is back with us to discuss this complicated history and relationship. So, Elijah, outside of his country, as it pertains to the West, they had this sort of on-again, off-again relationship with Gaddafi. They sometimes liked him, other times loathed him. You know, they painted him as something of a lunatic or loose cannon, but they, for the most part, tolerated him. What was the final straw with him? What drove the U.S. to lead this campaign to not only ouster him, but kill him? Was it the de-dollarization talk, the pan-African coalition ideas, gold standard, gold dinar? What was it that turned him into a pariah by the West?
Well, actually, all what you have mentioned, really. You see, Gaddafi, when he started, he built a major infrastructure across Africa. He built roads, bridges, mosques. And one of the biggest projects that he did was named as the Great Man-Made River. And that was designed of a total length of concrete pipeline of 4,000 kilometers and of 4 meters radius. And that he started the project in 1983 and he finished it in 1996. But his plan for Africa to introduce the African bank, like what the Chinese did today as the Asian bank, to substitute the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, introducing this and injecting hundreds of billions of dollars that he had, and he wanted to put such a big capital and bring all the African, it means really cutting off the West and the United States from their control of Africa. Also, the golden dinar is not to be underestimated, because he believed he needed to free Africa from the economic dependence on the West. And he challenged the dominance of the US dollar and the euro. So this is what today the BRICS is doing. In their last meeting, they decided to deal with their local currency. And this is why that is something that the Americans can never allow. So that was one of the main reasons why he was killed. And he was giving aid to be used for different various purposes. He was building hospitals and schools and funding scholarship for African citizens, not only Libyan. So his involvement in promoting all this revival of Africa was really unaccepted by the West. I mean, look today, France buys uranium from Niger at $0.8 a kilo, when in Canada is sold for $200 a kilo. So what France is paying $220 million a year to Niger in exchange of the reserve of uranium cost, in fact, $54 billion on the free market. All that, with the arrival of Gaddafi and his all grand idea, would have put end to all that and to the US and the EU and the Western colonialism, and will cut off the cheap or the theft of the African natural resources. And this is why they killed him.
Wow, that is quite a prophet. So Libya had deep ties to Italy and France under Gaddafi. Can you explain that for us?
Oh, yes. Libya relations with Italy and France during Gaddafi were on different levels, historical, economical, political, and strategic dimension. So Libya and Italy had a very old colonial history between 1911 and 1943. So that laid the foundation for the relationship that was developed later on into an improvement of the relationship, particularly when Gaddafi took the power in the late 60s. Italy became one of Libya's most important trading partners. The distance is very short by sea. Libya used to export oil to Italy, and the Italian energy company was directly heavily involved in the Libyan oil and gas exploration and production. In 2008, Italy and Libya signed a historical treaty. It was known as a friendship treaty. And then that partner and cooperation agreement, Italy agreed to pay $5 billion in compensation for its colonial rule. This is something that France is refusing to do with Algeria and other African countries. So in exchange, Libya promised to supply Italy with oil and to try and stop all the migration that is crossing to the Italian shore. And France, there are, like in Italy, significant economic interest in Libya. The French company are involved in Libya, also in oil infrastructure and in providing weapons to Libya. After Nicolas Sarkozy presented himself as a president in 2007, Gaddafi financed his campaign. This is why, as a president, he was one of the leaders in Europe who, even before the United Nations resolution to defend the civilian. So, yes, the relationship is old, is solid. During Gaddafi, I remember the famous picture Silvio Berlusconi, when he was a prime minister, kissing the hand of Gaddafi when he landed at the airport in Fiumicino. So all this is history, and it's a very grounded history, but unfortunately, they all conspired to kill him.
Looking into the future, what does the future of Libya look like? Do the warring factions make peace and reunite the country? What about all their oil fields? And should there be UN interventions here, at least on humanitarian grounds?
Predicting the future in Libya is challenging. The situation has been very fluid since the assassination of Gaddafi. There are, although, moments of hope, such as the signing ceasefire and peace agreement, and for the two governments to talk to each other. The presence of various factions, each with its own set of interests and foreign backers, make the peace process very complicated in Libya. The international pressure is on and off, and it depends on the interest. So you have the United States there, you have the Emirates, you have Turkey, you have Europe. And because of the large oil reserves in Africa, that is a malediction. It is not a blessing. It may have been a blessing for the Libyan when Gaddafi was around, but today is a curse because everybody wants the oil. Everybody wants to control the oil, with OPEC Plus reducing the production. So the European and the Americans are going to dig in Africa and mainly in Libya, because Libya and the rest of Africa are very rich in oil and gas. So in a peaceful scenario and reconstruction of the economy, the oil and gas will return under the control of the Libyan. Is this what the Americans and the Europeans want in this crisis, where they are fighting the Russians? They are not taking, well, they are still taking the Russian gas and oil without announcing it, but not like before. And they are struggling because Africa is cutting the road on exploiting the African continent, and they want to be treated on equal basis and sell their natural resources on a fair market price. So re-stabilizing Libya, bringing peace to Libya, I don't think today it falls into the interest of the Western community. The reconstruction of Libya will bring a lot of money because Libya has assets. But is this what the West want? I doubt that there is any need for a peace today in different countries, unstable countries, because only with war the United States is surviving. And today the U.S. administration is freezing all the other conflict in the world, particularly in Syria and Iraq. It doesn't want to pull out occupying northeast Syria, doesn't want to pull out from Iraq, notwithstanding the decision of the Iraqi parliament, but they want to keep the status quo as it is because they're very busy in fighting Russia and trying to upset the Chinese at the same time. So this is why it's difficult to say that there is a will of peace, because we haven't seen for the last 23 years any model, any European and American model or NATO model to bring peace anywhere, but to bring only war. This is what they have done in Afghanistan, have done in Iraq, in Libya, in Syria, and they're not going to start suddenly put the peace hat and start saying, well, we want peace to be regained in Libya. We want to reestablish peace, because this is not their philosophy. It is not their doctrine. Their doctrine is to sell weapons. And now they have a very prosperous market selling weapons to all Western and Eastern European, because these countries are sending all their weapons to fight Russia and Ukraine. And the Americans are supplying these countries with new weapons, but not for free, because they're selling it to these countries under the pretext of demonizing Russia and afraid of Russia's invasion of Europe, which is completely ridiculous and nonsensical. So to return to your question, I think it's very difficult to see any peace in the next 2 years as long as Biden is in power and we don't see what the next president is going to bring with him.
Yeah, sadly, it sounds like peace in Libya or reconstruction is many, many years away. Elijah Magnier, thank you so much. Elijah is a veteran war correspondent. Make sure you check out Elijah's work at ejmagnier.com.
Thank you for being with you. It's great to be here, and thank you for your time.
All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.